Thank you. I'd like to remind all participants today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, disconnect again.
Thanks. I think in our normal tradition, we'll take a minute on reviewing the agenda just to let a few folks join the call a little late and then do the roll and then go. So we've got the language out of the DAG to take a look at. I thought we would just take 15 minutes on that and see where we wind up. I would like to spend about 15 minutes on the notion that came up during the discussion on the last call about harms and perhaps inventing a mechanism to understand, address, and review them, because that seemed like it might present a path out of some of the conundra that we find ourselves in. And then the rest of the call devoted to seeing if we can sketch out a deal and a way forward to Brussels. Anything that people would like to add to that? Okay, I'm not hearing anything. Glenn, why don't you go ahead and call the roll, and then we'll get rolling.
Thank you, Marky. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the 3rd of June, the Vertical Integration PDP call. On the call, we have Siva Mutasami, Cheryl Langdonor, Mikey O'Connor, Faisal Shah, Eric Brunner-Williams, Jeff Newman, Paul Diaz, Steve Pinkos, Kathy Kleiman, Roberto Gaetano, Ken Stubbs, Phil Buckingham, Catherine Olmer, Ron Andruff, Brian Cute, Jeffrey Eckhouse, Sebastian Bachelot, Dan Halloran, Scott Austin, Frederick Fellman, Jothan Frakes, Avery Doria, Christina Rosette, Alan Greenberg. And for staff, we have David Olive, Liz Gaster, I've mentioned Dan Halloran already, Margie Milam, Marika Koenix, Mike Zupka, and myself, Glenda Saint-Géry. Thank you, Mikey. Over to you, unless I've left off anyone. And there are apologies from Michele Nilon.
Thanks, Glenn. There's a note, Glenn, in the chat that maybe Tonya could help us with this. There are long and short versions of the mute and unmute messages. And
yes.
There's a way to toggle that to the short ones so that when people come off mute, they don't get a big long
Definitely.
Message.
I'll get that sorted out, Mikey, because we shouldn't have that at all. Thank you.
Great. Great. Thanks. Okay. Let's see. First up is the new version of the DAG. There's an excerpt of the language in front of you on the screen in Adobe. And I don't know if there's much need for discussion. It seems pretty clear, but I did want to set some time aside. Margie, do you want to walk us through sort of the high points of this?
You want me to walk through the high points?
Yeah, I'm assuming I sent Kurt a note, but I bet he didn't get it. I was hoping that he might join us, but I'm sure he's a busy guy today.
Let me jabber him and see if he can get on. I haven't spent a lot of time on this, so I don't know if I'm the best person to go through it.
Okay, all right. Tell you what, why don't we swap the first two agenda items?
Mike?
And yes, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we might inquire to Dan Halloran to see whether or not that's something he was involved in and may be able to explain that.
Oh, that's a thought. Dan is on the call. Dan, do you want to take a crack at this, or should we wait?
Yeah, I think I'll also like to defer to Kurt just I'm checking with him right now to see if he's intending to join us. We'll get back to you in a minute on that.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. I'll tell you what. We'll flip the first two agenda items and see if Kurt can join us in a few minutes. Because, you know, I think him, he's probably the closest to all this. And he's probably our best candidate. That said, let's go on to the thought that came up right towards the end of the last call. We were talking about a list of harms, just the very starting point of a list. And one of the ideas that kind of popped out of the conversation, and I think it was sort of inspired by the earlier discussion when we were talking about the CAM proposal, of having some mechanism that was maybe specified in our proposal to be sort of a flexible way to understand and address harms as they came up, both in proposal, in applications for new GTLDs, and then afterwards. And I was just curious if proposal advocates or others had any ideas about that, and whether they thought, A, it was a good one, and B, if so, how we might do such a thing. Because it seems like a lot of what we're trying to do with the various structures that we've described is preventing harms. And maybe a way to handle that is not to try and predict every harm in advance, but rather address them either as they come up or as they become an issue. So I was just curious if folks had an idea about that. Ron, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. Excuse me. Without belaboring what I said at the end of the last call, I think it's really important that we do try to enumerate as many harms as we possibly can. I think by getting them out on a piece of paper, instead of talking about this amorphous idea of what harms are, we can actually try to be as creative as possible to create that list, both of existing harms, things that have happened already, or things that we fear might happen. But ultimately, as we had discussed last week, we can color code those, say these are issues that are VI co-ownership issues, and these are issues that aren't related to that, but yet are harms. And I think if we can get all of those stated and, you know, out in the light of day, we might find ourselves being a lot more comfortable with being able to move forward, saying, you know what, as we look at it now, we really don't see as many as we thought we saw. Or we may say, geez, this is pretty solid evidence as to why we shouldn't go forward with this. So my point is, I think it would be a very good exercise to undertake, and I would hope others would support that.
Thanks, Ron. That brings to mind another thought. You know, probably what we need is another matrix table kind of affair, and that reminds me that we should probably update the current table of proposals, the one that Kathy started. And I'm delinquent for not doing that call, but I'll do that as an action item out of this call, to put out a call to update. If people could send me those updates, I'll publish a new version of that. Alan, go ahead. Oh, you may be on mute, Alan.
Oh, sorry. I was trying to I was trying to go off mute, but you were cut out for 4 seconds while I was doing it.
Okay.
My apologies.
No worries.
I raised my hand in reaction to something you said, and that was the question of, instead of trying to enumerate harms, should we just wait for them and then react? I'm paraphrasing, but I think that was basically what you said. And I think that's the mode we are operating in right now. And we have proven to be not very reactive unless the harm is so large that we occasionally do react quickly. Most of the time we don't react quickly, we're not very nimble, and we either find out that, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it because the rules say it's allowed, or we start a long, involved process, which often takes years to try to address the rules.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe we would need some sort of mechanism that was a little more adroit than that. And I may have also added more to the paragraph than I should. What I was really interested in was exploring some sort of mechanism to handle this kind of stuff.
That's what PDP is.
Yeah, I know. Okay, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up and agree with what Ron stated, and I think that we should put the list of harms that we know it exists or what we can imagine, and then I think the most important point is to say, are these dependent upon cross-ownership? Can they exist now in our current format? And then maybe I think another thing would be, once we have that list, the people who put proposals together say, under this part of their proposal or under that, it could or could not exist, or say, you know, this part of my proposal does protect against this harm, this part does not protect against this harm. Maybe so we sort of get an idea of what the harms are, the potentials, and what parts of the proposals can help against them. And I think, but also just to be clear, the other part is to say, not to just, you know, worry about fear-mongering and to say, hey, listen, this is only possible with co-ownership, and this is possible now, and just to separate those out so we know the difference. So, because then there's a difference between, hey, launching new TLDs and allowing co-ownership. So just I want to be clear about that. But I think that is a good idea, and I think Jeff Newman pointed out a lot of links in a previous email of where some of the harms that people alleged would occur were in there, not that they're facts as harms, but some were alleged, some, and then we could also discuss the further merit of whether those are just, you know, harms that could never occur and people are worried about, because it's like, I think Richard Tindall said, it's like, if we allow co-ownership, it will cause global warming, is that a legitimate harm or not? So we need to go through some of those as well.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Ken Stubb. Sorry, I won't do that again.
Hello, Mikey. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, fine. One of the problems we've had, and one of the reasons that ICANN has not been necessarily, I won't say responsive, but the current process that we have for dealing with issues does not provide for any, in many ways, real clarity. By that, I mean the process isn't, in most cases, either incredibly cumbersome or the sanctions are so onerous that it makes it very difficult to deal with. And one of the things that ICANN is going to have to do, and I'm certainly not proposing necessarily doing it now, because if they do, the odds are it will either create havoc or will cause an additional extensive delay in the new TLD process, and that is ICANN has to take a very close look in the future as to how they can deal with sanctions for bad behavior. And I think they're going to have to develop some sort of a method for stratifying the sanctions to make them make sense, number one. Number two, they have to provide some sort of a way of filtering the complaints and so forth, so you don't end up with a situation where you have 3,000 complaints about the fact that somebody doesn't have something or if something is not accurate, and it becomes just an incredible job for managing it from a compliance standpoint. I do think that this is an evolving process, and I do think that once ICANN gets off the ground here, they're going to have to take a very close look at this. I think it's very difficult to put a sanction out that says if you make a mistake, we can put you out of business, force you to sell your company or anything like this, because all that does in most cases is create a lawsuit and an interminable delay, 6 months, a year. It could be even longer than that. So from a practical standpoint, it is something that needs to be looked at. And I think it is possible to even stratify the harms down the road. I don't think that was necessarily the mandate or the charter of this working group, but I do think that ICANN needs to take a close look at that as they move forward and evolve. It's a compliant issue. At the same time, I don't know how you can hard code something like that into a contract at the very beginning without having a clear process that is manageable. And I think we all would agree that a lot of the processes that ICANN has in place have not been as manageable or as everyone would like to see it. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Ken. Scott, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. Just a short comment that two calls ago, it seemed like when I brought up the issue of harms that either there were none or living in denial because we couldn't come to creating a list before a certain time. So I'm just very glad that we are going to, because I think that's our mission. I don't think to be so concerned about affiliated or related funding sanctions, but I think the idea was just, if, as Jeff has said, that there are some that are directly related to the idea of integration. That's it.
Thanks, Scott. I think that's it for the queue. I think I've kind of got my marching orders. Let me take the action to take another try at the list and build the first draft of a table with a few columns. And I'll try and push that out to the list for the proposal advocates to take a look at and perhaps, you know, I like Jeff's idea of letting the proposal advocates maybe weave that into their document and describe how their proposal addresses those harms. So let me take an action to push something out on that and see where we wind up. Not seeing anything. Oh, I guess Shiva's got something in the chat. Let's see. If we take the approach of reacting to harms rather than superficial measures such as cross-ownership controls, then we will necessarily have to evolve a good mechanism to address harms, mechanisms to react to harms. The prerequisite be to strengthen the processes for registrants to report harms. At the moment, we don't have have processes that registrants issues to ICANN. And I've got a note that Kurt is on the call. Perfect timing, Kurt. Let's wrap up the harms discussion and switch back to the conversation about the new language in the DAG. Kurt's on the call. Maybe he can just give us a few highlights and respond to a few questions. And many thanks, Kurt, for joining us, probably on such short notice.
No, that's okay. This call is always on my calendar, and I apologize for being late. The intent of what's published here is to provide clarification. So, as an example, Alan's question in the last meeting went to, what does no cross-ownership mean? Does it mean one share of stock or something less than some? If there's something less than that, so what's in the guidebook and in the contract is meant to provide clarification on that, and that's the primary purpose. And then in the guidebook also there's and in the contract there's sort of wrapper language around the intent of the board in doing this, the goals of the board, and their go forward positions. So it's meant to provide clarification and also that context. And so the extent it does great, to the extent it questions, I don't know if I'll be able to answer them because this is meant to anticipate and answer questions. But I'll do my best, and in cases where I can't, we'll defer it, and we'll get something in writing.
Yeah, I think mostly it's extremely helpful if there are questions that have come up from members of the group as they're contemplating our way forward. This would be a good time to get them on the table and at least get them in front of Kurt, and then if he can answer them right off the bat, great. But if not, certainly it wouldn't be expected that you have every answer to every question right away. Ken, I'm assuming your hand is left over from last time, so I'm going to skip to Ron, but if you want to be in the queue, I'll come back to you. Ron, go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. Thanks, Kurt. Ron Andrew. Kurt, I just wanted to ask about, in the footnotes, the fifth footnote, or the fifth point in the footnote says the board will review this issue again if no GNSE policy, GNSO policy results on these topics. Is that to say that if this working group does not come up with some consensus, then the board will then review what it's already put in place? Or is there something I'm missing here?
That's what it means, taking into account public comment and taking into account, you know, the work that this group's done.
Okay, so basically there's still an out then for the board that at some point to say, well, we're not happy with the, or I guess it's pretty clear, if the GNSO policy, if the GNSO does not come back and say, here's a policy, then the board would take it upon themselves.
Scott, don't enter me, please.
I'm sorry?
Glenn, were you trying to...
I'm sorry, Mikey. It should not have been entered in by name. I am testing the mute.
It doesn't work.
It's a great day when Glenn makes a mistake, I'll tell you. I'm going to write that one down in the book. That doesn't happen very often. Okay.
Not necessarily, so this is Kurt, not necessarily meaning the board would change, but meaning the board can review. We'll review this issue again.
That's what I need to hear. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jeff Newman.
Hey, Kurt. I'm looking at the version that's on Adobe, and I'm assuming that's just copied word for word from the actual contract. Is that right? Mikey, just a quick question.
I'm not sure. You know, Margie, did you?
Yeah, I cut it out from the module one, and then further down from the form agreement.
Okay, so at the end of 2.9, there's a. I'm going to get on this phone just in case it's my speaker that was causing
that
echo.
Oh, you know that was causing the echo. Good deal.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. The last sentence in 2.9 is bracketed. Is there a reason that that's bracketed? It says registry operator shall not engage or permit any distributor to provide registry services.
Is that what you're looking at?
No, sorry, 2.9A, the last sentence. There's just a bracket around it, so I'm just kind of...
Jeff, this is Dan Haller. I don't think there's anything special to that. I think we use brackets a lot as just kind of code, like, you know, look here, we especially want to comment on this, or this is up in the air still. So in addition to the note that Kurt put on in the footnote, kind of, which brackets that whole 2.9, that's a double bracket, I guess.
Okay, so then my question on that is, a distributor, would you consider, or would this agreement consider another registry being a distributor? Like, who's a distributor? Is it just a registrar, reseller, or something like that, or would that include another registry?
I think I'd take that or turn it around as a request, put that in as a comment, and if you have opinions on that or think it's not clear or could be clarified, give suggestions on that.
Well, you guys wrote the language. I'm just asking what you meant by it. And then my comment will be dependent on what is meant by it.
Yeah, I think I've given this line before that it doesn't matter what we thought. And what matters is what the words say on the paper, and if you think it needs to be clear, then let's clarify it.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be... I'm trying to be nice about this and trying to figure out, but you guys wrote it. You guys should be able to explain it to us, and I understand if there's a gray area, and you say, well, we didn't know what to do in that case, and so we're punting it, and, you know, we thought distributor meant this when we wrote the language, but you guys are free to tell us your comments on it. But to say you wrote the words, but you don't know what the words meant, I mean, I'm sorry, I just... Try to be nice here.
Jeff, I'm not taking offense or anything. I mean, you have a totally valid question. Do you,
is registry operator included as distributor of domain names? And I'm saying maybe that's something to be clarified.
I think, Jeff, are you asking if a registry is a distributor of domain names? Not whether any registry is considered a distributor, but rather if a registry is distributing domain names to third parties.
Is a registry operator itself or someone that provides back-end services considered a... Are they a distributor? In other words, does this provision prohibit a registry from using any other potential back-end registry provider as being a back-end provider for that TLD?
So, yeah, Jeff, I mean, I hate to, I'm just in the spirit of trying to be helpful. I think, if you think it's a question, I think we should probably look at it again and try and clarify it. I think if you look at at 29A, like the second sentence where it says registry operator ... shall not act as any form of distributor. So if you interpreted distributor to mean just acting as registry operator, it would sort of circle in and implode on itself because the registry operator then couldn't act as registry operator for its own TLD if that's considered distributing domain names.
But then you have that whole thing or any other top-level domain, which wouldn't necessarily make it implode on itself. It would just mean that the first part of the clause only applies to the last part.
So I'm going to draw a line here and say maybe, Jeff, what we need is for you to sharpen that question up and put it on the list and have those guys take a swing at it. But did you want to follow up then on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the follow-up, which I'm probably going to get the same answer from, is I'm assuming by putting registry operator and I'll withdraw. We can go on to the next person because I'm going to get the same answer, so it's okay.
Okay. I think it's a great question, and I think we do need an answer, but I think we're getting a little stuck on this. Kathy? You may be on mute, Kathy.
I don't have my hand up.
No, Kathy.
I'm sorry, I thought you said Ken.
No worries. You're still not hearing Kathy, unfortunately. Let's see if I can tell from the...
Cheryl, Kathy's written in the chat. She's fallen off the call and is coming back in now.
Ah, thank you.
So I think you'll hear her when she dials back in.
Okay. Avery, did you want to bring your question up out of the chat?
That's what I was going to answer.
Avery?
Okay, the long unmuting. If you'd like me to, I could say it out loud.
Yeah, I think that it's a good one.
When I first read that, I reviewed I'm talking about the board reviewing the implementation, reserving the right to review the implementation at a later time. And I was wondering whether that was any different than them reserving the right to review the entire implementation at a later time, or were people actually looking at it as some sort of lifeline to people that, A, didn't like the reinterpreted zero cross-ownership and were hoping it would go away, or B, weren't happy with the direction of the consensus process? Or was it just normal? The board can always review stuff later until it's final.
Kurt or...
Mikey?
Yeah, Kathy.
Mike, I've gotten back on the call. Sorry for keeping everyone waiting.
No worries.
Hang on
for just a second, Kathy. I slipped a question from Avery in there first.
Oh, excellent.
Then, as soon as this is done, we'll come back to you. Kurt, do you want to talk to Avery's question at all?
Yeah, so I think Avery's right. The board can, until the implementation plan or the guidebook is fully approved by the board, any issue can be revisited. I think we've seen that in this, the implementation where we thought issues were settled and visited. So, I think the board wanted to make a point here, and No, this wasn't a resolution by the board, but sort of a discussion and sense by the board that if there wasn't a consensus, they would review the model at the next meeting or subsequently, and it would be the GNSO census model, or they would review the existing model. Obviously, in conveying the sense, they wanted to make a point.
Yeah. Okay. Kathy.
Yeah. Hi, Kurt. Thanks so much for being on the call. I had a question in the note about the note on the first page at the bottom about number two. And I don't know if you can provide a little more light, but it says a very strict interpretation of the resolutions might create unintended consequences. Those are important words, but can you provide a little more detail about what they mean?
Well, again, not... not speaking for the board, but reporting some of what was said and the sense that I got from it, and this wording is that that there were questions leading up to the publication of this about the consequences of owning one share of stock in a registry or a registrar, and in a publicly held company, what are the consequences of that? And some other consequences. So this language that you see here in module one and in the contract is meant to provide clarification and avoid those what's termed here to be unintended consequences.
But based on something you said earlier, is it my understanding that the DAG 4 is meant to clarify anything, that this section is meant to clarify anything that might have been misread or overbroad in the resolutions, but we can read this section very strictly, the new section very strictly?
Yeah, I think the new section is the set of rules, of course the comment we're looking for is, are there still, who knows what we mean by unintended consequences? That's in the mind of the beholder. But are there still consequences that are, adverse to what the goals of the whole program are by this language? So this implementation that you see here was intended to avoid unintended consequences, and I'm sure the board and certainly us want to, and you want to hear if there are still consequences to this that are adverse to the goals of the program.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Jeff Newman. Or is that left over from before?
No, this is a new point. It's just, let me try handset here. One of the things I'm going to, one of the unintended consequences is, generally, public companies don't know who their shareholders are unless they own more than 5%. So I like the 2% rule, but I think for a public company, it's not going to be enforceable because they won't really know who owns more than 2%. They'll only know who owns more than 5%.
Right, and that this is Kurt, and that's a U.S. rule too, right?
Yep. Correct. That's only U.S., yeah.
So it's more complex than that, but it's a good point.
Right. I'll file that as a comment.
Thank you.
Jeff Eckhaus.
Yeah, I actually had two questions, and one is related to actually Jeff Newman's. And if, let's say I decided, say a registrar decided to invest, something like $105 million into VeriSign and buy VeriSign stock and owned, 2.2%. How would, is it up to that person to file the objection? And I guess you're sort of saying, hey, we'll have to look into that. But my further question is, what happened? This is in this part, it's saying on applications will not be considered. But in the registration agreement, the same terms are used. But I don't think there was a provision of what would happen if the 2% ownership was gone over once somebody already had that TLD. Was that considered, or did I miss that? And can someone point out what would be the ramifications if? If that 2% was crossed,
hang on a second.
That was Kurt for the
What's a violation?
Dan, again, that's another one we'll look at, and I'd invite that to be submitted as a comment, please.
So, I mean, this is Jeff Newman. I could talk about what a public company does, if that helps, but I don't know
sure.
if that'll help you out. So if a public company wants restrictions on their shares, they have to put that into their charter. So VeriSign would have to update, like Neustar would have to update its corporate documents to indicate that no one can own more than a certain percentage. Once it has knowledge, if someone purchases those shares, it can force, by virtue of its shareholder agreements, it usually can force a divestiture of shares up to the amount that the restriction was set. So we have that restriction now at 5% with the telecom service provider cannot own more than 5% of Neustar. We're a public company. Once someone purchases over 5%, we're immediately notified that happens, and then if they're a telecom service provider, which has only happened once, we basically send them a notice that they have to divest, and within 10, 15 days, they have to divest.
Okay.
I mean, so that kind of thing could happen in this case, too.
That, Jeff, and so that is sort of the way a company would implement this restriction, but I think the...
Yeah, the
other side is what happens if they don't, I guess.
Right, exactly. That was my question. I knew that, Jeff. I understood that. I knew that point in advance. I was just curious what happens if it goes over.
So I think the general idea behind this, and Kurt and I were kind of parsing through 2.9B to see where exactly it fits, and it might be it needs to be looked at again, but the general idea would be you have to do that or you'd be in breach of the agreement. So we'll
right.
make sure.
It's not an immediate. I was just thought if you guys knew it offhand, if not, then you could come back to us on the list. That's fine. We could just move ahead with other questions and sort of get back to that one.
Yeah, this is Mikey. I think that does sound like one to sort of do the same thing, Jeff. Ping it to the list or maybe... Yeah, frame it as a question to the list and let Kurt and Dan reply to it.
Yes, thanks. We'd appreciate that.
We don't lose, it gives them time. It's a pretty long new document to parse through real quick. Scott, go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, my comment on Jeff's statements there and regarding control. If you look at the comments on the PDDRP, the Post-Litigation Dispute Resolution Process, there's specific comment about expanding that to apply to both registrars as well as registries, and it could be something as simple as requiring registrars to disclose their ownership interests in registries. So it wouldn't necessarily be a percentage, but it'd just be a disclosure of their ownership.
Yeah, and I think that gets to the same dichotomy. That doesn't address the issue of what happens if they exceed it.
Right, well, but I thought that the DRP was there for ICANN to police the agreements and the saying that the intention to registrars with both entities.
Ah, okay. So maybe that can get folded into both the question and the reply from Kurt and Dan. Other questions for Kurt while we've got him? If not, I think... I'll draw the curtain down on this part of the agenda. We're running a little late, so I don't want to spend a whole lot more time on this, but I'll take a couple more. Kathy, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if Kurt might share, and maybe you can't, what the expectation is from the working group, Kurt, if there isn't a consensus coming out of the working group, what might the board be expecting to see?
Hmm.
forward to look at the comments and the work of the GNSO group, so the, you know, to date, and review it. But I will, you know, you're exactly right. I wouldn't even speculate on what that might be.
Fair enough. Thank you.
But, you know, I will say that the board, you know, arrived at this position after considerable discussion and consideration. Oh, I just want to convey that it wasn't a lightly taken position, and with a we'll see attitude, it was a seriously considered position, but with the caveat that they're going to review it later. Just trying to do the right balancing. I'm sure I screwed it up.
Thank you.
Hard one to summarize. Thanks, Kurt. Anybody else? Okay, I'm gonna move us on to the next agenda item, which is to sort of take our temperature and see where we're at on a deal, and see if we can plot a way forward. We are at our self-imposed deadline. Today's the day, and at least this observer isn't sensing that we're there yet, but I wanted to get the sense of the group and figure out what we do. So I guess this is mostly a call to especially the most active negotiator, proposal advocate type people. Do you sense convergence happening around the various facets of the proposals or not? And if not, what do we do to get beyond this? Any thoughts? Avery wrote in the chat, lock us in a room until there's white smoke. I'm kind of attracted to that myself. I don't know that I've actually posted this to the list, but we do have a session scheduled, face-to-face session scheduled in Brussels for us on Saturday morning. I think it's 9 a.m. local time, Brussels. Clearly, it would be helpful if we could be further along than we are now by the time we get there. But you know, that's sort of our absolutely last, second to the last chance, I guess. Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only half kidding. But then again, I'm usually only half kidding. I haven't seen this happen in ICANN. It's certainly something that happened, and I know people are going to say, oh, but that was just technical stuff, in the IETF, where we would have serious proponents of different solutions, and basically what would often happen is we'd be told to go off, go away, and, you know, sort of see if it was possible to arrive at a common view of the proposals we were putting in. I did it at least twice, once when I was the chair that asked for such a thing to happen, and once when I was the neutral person that was added to the group to see if I could help it happen. Eventually, we did come to a common protocol on the second one. So that is an possible scenario where, you know, those of us that, you know, think we've got something, think that we on trying to reach consensus. I know that on the CAM proposal, while we obviously haven't reached it yet, we were trying to take into account the things people said and trying to get there while staying faithful to a couple principles, you know, basically the competition authority principle, et cetera. So, I mean, that's one possibility, and that's kind of what I meant in my flip way. Thanks.
Well, I was only half kidding when I laughed, because I tend to agree that this is certainly an approach. And I guess the question is there a way to do this before we get to Brussels? In other words, does it require, and it may require, face-to-face interaction, or is it something where, in a way I was sort of hopeful that a deadline would put that kind of pressure on, but I don't think we made it. There was a conversation on the call two calls ago, I think, which many of the work groups said that they were comfortable going into Brussels without an agreement. In fact, I think a majority of that call, or at least a majority of the folks polled on that call, were comfortable going to Brussels without an agreement. And I guess the question is, maybe I can use the poll again. Close this chat window, or this. Nope, just I'll open this poll.
Mikey, can you speak up? I'm finding it almost impossible to hear you, Cheryl. Here.
Sorry, I'm thinking and talking at the same time. What if we just took a poll, re-polled on the question, do we think we can come to an agreement before Brussels? Let's put it that way. I agree. I think we can get to an agreement, or no, I don't think we can get to an agreement before Brussels.
Mikey, it's Ken. I have a point of order.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Agreement, define agreement. I'm not being silly, you know.
I think that basically the product of the working group is essentially a proposal that has, in a perfect world, absolute consensus, in a real world, at least rough consensus, and that's what I'm talking about, is the agreement around such a proposal before we get to Brussels. I'm sort of playing off of Avery's point, which is I think we really do need to figure out a way to increase the pressure on people to move their positions together. And we haven't seen a whole lot of movement. So one approach is to say we go to Brussels and we didn't get to consensus around a proposal, and thus we'll turn over our proceedings to the board and carry on into our second phase. I'm at sixes and sevens. I don't really know how to proceed at this point. Jeff, and then Cheryl.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. I think that today might be a little early to conduct that poll, just because now that the new guidebook has come out and there's clarification, and certain people, certain groups that, you know, thought, you know, weren't sure of their position are now sure of their position, and some are not. So, and there's a lot more clarification. I think that there should be some more discussions now, because certain things changed, and I think that maybe we might be able to have this poll again on Monday, and you might get more of a response as people continue to digest the guidebook and their positions, and discussions continue.
So maybe set the deadline back to at least to next Monday, given the timing of the arrival of the guidebook. Is that a... What should we use as sort of our pressure generating device? Is Monday a realistic deadline to put enough pressure on folks to have the conversations and move proposals closer together?
Mike, it's K. can, though. Put me on the list.
Yeah, I'll put you on the queue after Cheryl.
I'm sorry.
Cheryl, go ahead.
Thank you, Mikey. I just wanted to point out that this, which is, I think, the appropriate time to point it out, and I've just sent a follow-up email to the email Alan Greenberg sent to the list earlier today, whenever it is in your today, because what it does to some extent is start putting some clear polling on the table. Alan made several very, I feel, for obvious reasons, when you see my email, important points on this and what should be happening before, after, or during Brussels, but also where he currently sits in terms of support or otherwise for what is on the table. I've just done exactly the same thing. Maybe if more of us do that, that might also help to, A, take the temperature, and, B, put the pressure on the pain points.
That sounds great. Ken, you're next.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say that I think we might need just a little more time as opposed to Monday. I think we have to be realistic that we have a weekend, and it's always more difficult for people to communicate on a weekend. Granted, I know we have emails, but, you know, I think we should be realistic and assume that there's a much greater chance that we would have something done of the second meeting of next week. And, you know, that's just the way I feel about it.
Well, if we were to take that approach, would there be something that could be done that's useful on the Monday call? Or should we just cancel that one and put all the pressure on a week from today? What's your thought on that, Ken?
Well, my thought on that would be that you could either... I wouldn't necessarily cancel the call because there may be a request for additional clarifications, for elaborations. Somebody may come across with a request for someone to expound on something that may have come up in the next few days. You know, I really don't know, but I'm more comfortable with something a little further on in the week, but that's just, I'm one of, gosh, what have we got, 35, 40 people on the call here. Maybe someone else has some.
I certainly understand your thought. I mean,
I think the idea of putting pressure is important, but you have to be realistic, and I think
right.
The point was made, you know, people are still digesting the latest issue of the DAG. And it requires a very close evaluation of one's goals and one's current position and what one feels it can get. And I'm talking about as a member of this group, realism steps in. That's all.
Yep. Okay. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, another consideration I think maybe one way to work this is, you know, you and Roberto are going to have to write a report. So kind of work backwards on the calendar. And you're going to write a report that either primarily says, we went through the process and there is this proposal that has, you know, majority, substantial, consensus support, whatever it is. Or you're going to write a report that says, we couldn't come up with a single report. We've got a couple. We've got three. Here's how they're supported respectively, and we, you know, have this grid. And the grid might even be in your first report. But I think maybe prudently the calendar back, you would have to have either of those two versions of the report completed and ready, hit the send button, and then work the calendar back. That gives you guys enough time to either accept the splintered result and finish your report or the single proposal result and finish your report.
There was Jeff Newman was firing away in the chat while you were talking, Brian, and saying that the working group writes the report, not the chairs. And just Jeff, I can't remember if you were on the call. I volunteered to draft a report. I wouldn't write it, but I could be the scribe. And I think that may be what Brian is meaning there. At least that's the way I'd spin it.
That's okay.
Yeah, I meant writing. You guys have to physically write it. Yes, obviously the group signs off on the report, but you guys have to do the writing. Or we collectively do the writing.
Yeah.
Mike, can I ask a question that's directly tied to this conversation you're having right now?
Okay, go ahead.
At this point in time, does it appear that either you or Roberto will be in Brussels?
Oh, I have good news to report on all fronts. We will both be in Brussels for the starting on Friday. Roberto gets there a little later in the day. I get there midday, and we'll both be there through the Wednesday public session, and I will be there through the end of the week. So you have two. You have me, the junior co-chair, and Roberto, the senior co-chair, there for at least the first two-thirds of the meeting. Okay, back to Brian's point. I may start doing a little bit of at least an outline of a report, but Brian, I think you're right. Basically, the report right now is pretty easy to write. It's either we have a proposal, and here it is, or we have several, and here's how the group feels about them. So I'm not feeling like there's a lot of timeline issue there. I wish I could use that as a pressure point, but I don't want to. I think that this pressure needs to be just self-imposed pressure rather than a kind of, normally I would say absolutely, but in fact I think this report could be written literally in hours because so much of the work is really contained in the proposals, not in the wrapper that goes around it. Siva?
Yeah, I just wanted to suggest one of the ways by which we can move faster towards a consensus. Apart from having discussions on phone and apart from our email exchanges, we can start preparing a draft document which everybody starts editing right away. It can be a draft document that you as chair of the working group begin, on which all of us will have access and start commenting and editing, modifying like a wiki or a Google document. So that should take us closer to a consensus faster.
Thanks, Eva. That's something I considered, and it's often done in formal consensus process. In fact, that's what we did here in Minnesota. And the reason I'm not pushing real hard on that is because we really have several drafts like that already in the form of the proposals, and I found it difficult to make the transition from the multi-draft to the single one just logistically. And so that's why I've been putting pressure on especially the proposal advocates to consolidate them. But I would entertain thoughts on that. I mean, I'd be happy to take a stab at it, but as I said, I started down that road and kind of hit a bit of a dead end, so I could use some help. Let's see. I haven't been watching the queue. Brian, is yours left over from before? I'm going to assume that it was. If I'm in error and you want to speak again, Brian, just let me know. Jeff, go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I think I agree with you on the report is really, if we want to put this together as a proposal, but, you know, the different proposals and where they stand, but, I mean, I think if I read the footnote correctly, it says that, you know, that we already have the position. We have the default position. This is where we are. Unless the GN, it says, hold on, let me just read it, to develop a stakeholder-based policy on these issues. So, I mean, we could submit it, but I think maybe some of the GNSO experts could help me. What would we need to have a GNSO, you know, based stakeholder policy? What would need to be passed for that to happen? I mean, the actual numbers. Maybe somebody could help me, because right now we have, you know, so much disagreement between different stakeholder groups and different pieces. So I'm curious what we would need to do, because if, as I see it now, the report would just be, here are the proposals, here are the people that support it, and, you know, but we have not enough to seem like we can get a consensus policy and that we stay with the board position.
Before I throw that open to the rest of the group, I think one of the telling phrases is that one that we quizzed Kurt about, that said that the board, you know, they specifically left themselves the opportunity to review our proceedings. And so one possible outcome, I'm not terribly keen on this outcome, mind you, but one possible outcome would be that we prepare a report that says we have three major points of view. Here they are. And the board takes that document and makes their own decision. And I think that the obvious drawback to that is that it means that we aren't shaping the policy. We're basically punting it. And so I think it would be really helpful if we could hammer out something that we actually agree on that we can then work up through the council and to the board so that, you know, there really is. I mean, this is not unlike the situation that we were in Minnesota, where we had extreme consumer advocates and carriers in the same room trying to come up with policy about broadband. And I don't think that's impossible. I think that we can do that. And I think that some of the places where we find opportunities to meet are in some of the sort of thinking outside the box type proposals, like the one that Mike Pallage described in the CAM proposal. Yeah. I'm not saying that I'm for it or against it. I'm just saying that, you know, that's an example of something like that. But I think that the fallback is we don't agree. We have several proposals, and it basically goes back to the board.
Hey, Mikey, it's Jeff. Can I just respond to that? I don't think our job is to present any of the proposals or our work to the board. I thought it was to present it to the GNSO. The proposals. I mean, the board is free, of course, to look at information, but we're not submitting this to the board. It's just the GNSO, and then can vote on it or not. And then, but the board already has a position.
Right, but you know what I read into that paragraph is that, and what I also am kind of reading into Kurt's response, is that they are watching, and that they
that was frightening, by the way.
well, there you go. So, you know, I agree. We are not preparing proposals for the board, but I think the fact that if we came up with a report that looked like that, they would read it, and they might act on it. So I think it's beholden on us to do the very best we can to sort of not leave that unlocked grenade rolling around on the floor. I think it's much better if we can actually come to an agreement, make some compromises, unite around it, and present that to the GNSO, et cetera, the usual process. Because there is this sort of subtext that's there. Roberto, go ahead.
Yes, I was kind of responding to these kind of comments. I think that that's correct. We do report and present our results to the GNSO. But I tend to disagree on the fact that the board has already a position. The fact that the board has taken a decision in Nairobi It was clearly to give the ball back. And that's not, in my opinion, I mean, my experience, previous experience with the board, the board has not yet made a decision on vertical integration, has only set the default. So I think it's very important if we can come with some points of consensus that the GNSO can then present, if the council agrees, as the position of the GNSO. We had two people in the beginning as observers from the board following what was going on in this working group. They have been silent and they're no longer participating in teleconferences, but I'm sure that there is some sort of monitoring of what is happening here. So I think that what we are doing here can and will be important for the decisions that will be taken in the months to come. So I would like to say that I would be against a kind of frustration attitude on the fact that we have not come yet to any significant consensus. But anyway, the game is already set, and we are going to go with the default solution that the board has set in Nairobi. I think that I'm absolutely convinced that we can come up with something, and I think that all what we need to do is to make a realistic assessment on what we can come up as a consensus, even in Brussels, even if past the term, the deadline, even if we do that in the physical meeting that is going to take place on Saturday in Brussels, it will still be significant. The board will have the usual workshop on Sunday, and that will be the day after we have our session in Brussels. And I'm sure that what we will be discussing and the potential consensus points will be reported to the board. So, again, what we are doing here is important and can influence the board decision in Brussels.
Thanks, Roberto. Ken, you're on.
Yeah, just a couple of things. I'm going to step back about 5 or 10 minutes and agree with you, Mike. I think the idea of publicly editing a document, I never forget I sat in an ITU meeting for 4 hours while they argued about a one-word substitution, and it just doesn't necessarily work that way. At the same point in time, trying to take a little bit from what Roberto talked about, I think if you look at all the work product that's been done by this group over the last, 6 weeks now or something like this, there are certain commonalities that are certain things that are starting to develop that are becoming more and more common as proposals surface, as people comment and stuff like this. There have been attempts to try to create, I think Kathy a few weeks back did a matrix, and there are certain things that you can start to look at that are showing up there, and I think there's an obligation to report that there are trends. I honestly think that it, you know as well as I do, when you get a diverse group like this together, you're never going to get everybody to agree on everything. but at the same point in time, there is a clear trends that develop one way or the other, whatever they may be, types of ownership, types of TLDs, you know, back and forth. I think we have an obligation to communicate that. By the way, I would say, Roberto, that there are still board members that I've been on the call, because I know for a fact George Sadowski's been on at least one or two of the last two or three calls. Maybe doesn't stay on very long, but he's signed in over in the attendee list. And I'm hoping that there are members of the board that are taking the time to listen to these things and to look very closely. I'm certain that they are. And I think we just need to keep pushing forward. I would be horribly disappointed if a report came out that said something like this: a whole bunch of people got together for 8 weeks and nobody could agree on anything. We could not arrive at a, you know, that's not true. There is a lot of agreement in here. There's disagreement as well. But the point is, there are threads developing in here all the way down the line. There have been posts in the last 3 or 4 days in reaction to both the new DAG and in reaction to discussions that you know as well as I do are all going on off the list as well. So, you know, I certainly don't think that we're not capable of providing the board with some, the board through the GNSO, with meaningful information that will help them make any decisions as to whether or not they want to move from the current position that they have. Thanks.
You bet. Thanks, Ken. Here's my summarization. I would ask, and I'll put all this out in a note to the list too, but I would ask that everybody who's a proposal advocate who has a role in Kathy's matrix to go through and update your row and send me a copy of the matrix with that updated row, and I will and I would ask that that's done by close business tomorrow, just to get a snapshot of where things are at right now. Not to say that it's frozen, but just to take that snapshot. We'll set the new deadline for a week from today. We'll meet Monday, because I have a feeling there's plenty to talk about. Avery just raised a good point in the chat, and I will take, Margie dropped off the call, so I will take an action for Margie. Could everybody also forward the latest version of your proposals to Margie by close of business tomorrow, and she will post them to the wiki so that we've got that repository up to date. And we'll keep going, because I agree with everything that folks have just said. I think this is, you know, I like to do a slide when I do a presentation, just reporting on a group like this, and one of the slides that I'll do is the one that captures the number of meetings and emails and work products that we've come up with in this very short working group. We are at this point at about a factor of 3 times as many emails as some very substantial PDPs that took a year or more. You know, there's nothing to be ashamed of so far, but we do need to drive this one a little bit closer to closure. So I think that's probably as good a point as any to wrap this up. Let me just touch on the actions that I've got. I will take an action to consolidate my little list plus the links that Jeff sent to the list about the table of harms, and I will send a new version of that to the list also by close of business tomorrow. And if we could get the Kathy's table updates to me by close of business tomorrow, and then latest versions of proposals to Margie by close of business tomorrow. We'll use those tools to continue the conversation, keep working, and we'll update ourselves on Monday and try and see where we wind up with a kind of new deadline of Thursday next week. I think that's it. Anybody got any final thoughts before I sign us off? Okay, then.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Marty.
Oh, that's right. Happy birthday to Kathy Kleiman. Yeah, to me and Kathy.
And Roberto coming up this weekend, I think.
And Roberto's coming up on the weekend. It's no wonder we get along so well. Yeah.
Take a few long necks out of cash.
We'll all
be older when we meet again on Monday anyway.
All of us,
it's,
right.
It's that one-way street. Okay, thanks, gang. Let's keep at it. I think we can do this. All right, bye-bye.
Enjoy the day off. Bye-bye.